Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Omfer DMI podcast. This is Bhavin Patel from London, and today we talk to Pietro Grassano, Business Solutions Director at Algorand. Prior to joining blockchain technology company Algorand, Pietro was at JP Morgan Asset Management from 2002 to 2019, where he was country head for France since 2014. Before this, he had been head of sales for Italy and responsible for business in Greece. Prior to that, in 2002, he held commercial functions at BNP Paribas Asset Management in Milan, and overall, he has more than 20 years of experience in the asset management sector. In today's discussion, we hope to discuss the core differences between public and private blockchains. We hope to also distinguish between the definitions, properties such as governance, scalability, speed, transparency, and security, as well as the advantages and disadvantages of both types of networks. And finally, share any use cases and examples of where each type is used. So thank you, Pietro, for joining me today, and welcome. Maybe the first question I can simply just ask you, can you define maybe the key differences between public and private blockchains, as well as any examples and use cases you've seen in the industry?
Sure. So I would say that the main categories that we can see are related to the dimension of public and private blockchains, and as well of permissionless or permissioned access to those blockchains. Essentially, the blockchain was born as a public permissionless type of ledger, where everybody had the ability to participate to the mining, let's call it the validation of the next block, and potentially also to see the transactions. So public in the sense that everybody could participate to the perspective on the blocks, look into the blocks, but as well permissionless in the sense that those validators, the validators, the stakers, the miners could be absolutely unknown. Everybody could participate to this infrastructure. Later on, there has been an evolution in the direction of make the use of the blockchain a bit more, if you want, enterprise friendly, where the both the validation, so the ability to accept a specific transaction on the next block, and also the ability to see the transactions, the transaction list, had to be somehow concealed, sometimes for regulatory reasons, sometimes for enterprise reasons. The overall concept that we see today is distinguished between public permissionless, public permissioned, where actually not everybody can validate the transaction. The validators have to be known. Then private permissioned, normally private permissionless doesn't make much sense actually, right? So the use cases that one can think of are related to the different levels of trust that you want to have by design coming from the blockchain infrastructure. If you are thinking in terms of the wider possible visibility, both in terms of validation of the transaction and ability to see the transactions, then you have to go in the direction of a public permissionless blockchain. If you want to keep the ability to validate and potentially the stake to a subset of the potential users, I don't know, the members of a specific consortium, then you will go for a permissioned logic, first of all. If you want to keep concealed the transactions and what is in the block, then you will go to a private type of logic. It's worth to mention the fact that these use cases can be very, very different, right? So if I want to create trust by design, I need to be as open as possible. I need to avoid the walled garden type of logic. I need to be as transparent as possible with the information that I'm giving. Of course, this comes at a cost, which is the cost of privacy. If, on the opposite, I want to have the most private possible implementation, then I will go for a private blockchain, but it's a little bit of a compromise because at the end of the day, I might be better off with a simple database.
Thank you, Pietro. You already mentioned already there are distinct levels of governance, control, and maintenance of these two types of networks. Maybe could you distinguish the benefits of both of these types of blockchains and possibly explain why some of these different types of blockchains are suited for different uses?
Sure. The benefits are, as mentioned before, different grades of benefits of the blockchain architecture. The blockchain architecture was born in order to create a digital representation of value that through the validation of the participants could be able to avoid double spending by design. So this is why blockchain exists, right? Since the very beginning. The fact of limiting somehow the access to the perspective on the blocks, the visibility on the blocks, or on the other end, the ability to validate transactions can respond to very different logics. Some of them are regulatory requirements. The fact that for any regulatory reason, there, for instance, I don't know, GDPR in Europe, or the need of a regulator to have a responsible for any specific liability that may come from any specific behavior, the set of validators have to be known in advance and kept liable for what they are validating. Of course, this can be used in a very different type of enterprise-grade implementations. It's a little bit, if you want, a compromise to the very nature of blockchain, which is the fact that you obtain this avoidance of double spending via the wider possible group of validators and of witnesses of what is happening. Of course, it comes at a cost, which is that the trust will be limited to the members of the consortium or to the, I don't know, the set of participants that have validator access or visibility access, right? You limit the trust that you obtain by design by the blockchain. Of course, there are good reasons, right? Not everything has to be all the time public. Not everything has to be all the time private. Not everybody should be able to do anything all the time, right? So I personally believe that there is some space for both approaches. The important thing is to avoid very strong narratives that we are seeing today in favor of one logic or the other. I think that everyday's life is pretty much articulated between public and private behaviors, moments of the day of each one of us. I don't see why blockchain should be doing any difference here.
Thank you, Pietro. Transparency can be an issue for private networks, while creating a greater degree of trust and security that can be garnered through more decentralized methods of verification in public blockchains. Could you explain why trust and transparency is an important feature for payments infrastructures? And would we see this greater security of information stored on blockchains, especially in instances of decentralized identity or any other sensitive information?
Sure. Well, First of all, I think that transparency is an added value brought by blockchain, right? So you want to have a decentralized type of network because it adds elements of transparency and it represents a common truth among people that can see that it's a shared reality, right? The alternative, the true alternative to the logic of alternative facts, if you want. In that sense, also visibly, the fact of having a public blockchain that can organize the ledger in blocks that are validated and can be inspected in a transparent manner can bring added value to a payment infrastructure because this becomes somehow censorship resistant. This becomes a way to avoid tampering of the register. This becomes a way to avoid falsification. This is a way to avoid fraudulent utilization of what should be at the end of the day the payment infrastructure, right? Which should have the features and the characteristics of any other infrastructure. For instance, as you correctly point out, the logics of decentralized identity getting to the logics of self-sovereign identity, where at the end of the day, the blockchain can substitute the certification authority to some extent, can create a much more robust and less costly infrastructure for payments compared to the one of today, which has very good features and in some countries works very well, but in others it doesn't. And it has pitfalls when it comes to the identity logics, to the costs, and so on. So I think that this kind of transparency is part of the ability of blockchain of bringing into the financial world the concept of avoiding walled gardens. And actually avoiding walled gardens is what you want when you want to put in place an infrastructure for frictionless exchange of value.
Thank you, Pietro. Private networks, as mentioned, has its disadvantages, mainly in the lack of transparency and security, you know, given fewer validating nodes. However, speed and scalability has been presented as an advantage over public blockchains, for instance. A question that does need to be addressed is, can public blockchains achieve the level of speed, energy, efficiency required of a payment system while allowing for scalability?
Yeah, I think that this is one of the narratives that we need to put a little bit aside, right? And it's part of the polarization private and public, which personally I don't think is a correct way of putting the various consideration and the discussion. Historically, of course, if you put together two nodes, well, it's going to be easier to have them talking in a quicker manner than having a network that covers all the planet. Yeah, easier. Only thing, it's not a blockchain. Only thing, it's just two friends talking and possibly using the same database, right? This can be, of course, quicker, but it doesn't obtain what the blockchain wants to obtain, which is that level of common shared trust by design that the validation of different nodes and many different nodes can give. What is true is that this narrative has been allowed by the evolution of the blockchain protocols. I mean, blockchain protocols that are energy consuming, that by design take a lot of time before validating a node and therefore, a block and therefore the transactions that are in that block. Well, paved the way somehow to a narrative for which you need something different. And it's actually the concept, the overall concept of the Vitalik Buterin trilemma of blockchain, where he doubted about the possibility of having together the decentralization required by a blockchain together with the cryptographical security in order to move value around, and the economic scalability, again, to move that value scale. The type of evolution of the protocols bring us to think that, for instance, Algorand's blockchain is totally able to solve the trilemma and therefore bring elements of scalability, the speed of the transactions. We are, as of today, at 1,200 transactions per second, and we will reach 46,000 transactions per second by the end of year 2021, with the instant finality of the transaction. The finalization of the block is 4.4 seconds. It's going to go to 2.5 seconds. And with the energy efficiency that comes actually from this efficiency of the protocol in validating the transaction. Therefore, if the, those statistics, those metrics can be achieved, they are absolutely online with the centralized systems, not to mention the private networks.
Thank you, Pietro. What we're seeing now is more of a club-like approach of consortiums leveraging private blockchain, which does raise the question of interoperability and fungibility of value, say tokenized assets or cash tokens across different systems and channels. So accessibility for wider institutions becomes an issue when some of these consortia grow and maybe dictate high entry requirements. Firstly, how important is interoperability and participation for more diverse payments providers on these different networks? And how, if so, are maybe public networks better suited to achieve this?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the bubble tower type of problem, right? Okay, we invented language. The language is meant to allow us to transact meaning, but then we invent our own jargons, our own languages, and therefore a communication breaks down. I think it's the same risk that the consortia approach tend to have. Of course, it's absolutely natural that in order to transact, you need to have a multiple set of people to transact or entities transacting, right? So it's pretty natural that this takes the form of a consortium. But let's not lose focus on what the value proposition of blockchain is. Blockchain aims at being an infrastructure for the digital representation of value and for the digital representation of transactions on value. All infrastructures have three characteristics, three overarching characteristics. They have to solve a problem, in this case, represent and transact value in the digital age, where without blockchain, the copy-paste is always not a risk, and therefore tampering and falsification is always a risk. Apart from solving efficiently a problem, any infrastructure has to have elements of accessibility. Otherwise, it doesn't become an infrastructure. And elements of security. You think about the internet. You think about the railroads, the Roman roads, the bridges, and so on. They all have these three characteristics. They solve the problem moving you from point A to point B. They have to be accessible. If you get to that bridge, someone asks you, €3,000 to let you pass. Well, this is not likely to become an infrastructure. And security. If there is any doubt that you will be robbed on that bridge, you will not get into that bridge, right? It's the same with blockchain. And therefore, the limits of accessibility that the consortium approach tends to have is a problem. And it's even before the concept of interoperability. It's a problem in the sense that it's a betrayal of the idea of making of it an infrastructure, right? I think that this, on the other hand, is pretty natural. As I said at the very beginning, you want to start to transact on a new type of construct with people that you already know, that you tend to trust, and so on. It's a little bit like in the early days of the internet. Every company wanted to have its intranet. right? If you remember. And pretty soon, there was the understanding that going for a set of different intranets, would not have allowed the positive network effects of going for a single protocol on a global level. Therefore, yes, absolutely, interoperability is key. It's key as well for the payment and the fact that payment can unleash a good part of their potential. I'm thinking in terms of real-time gross settlement. I'm thinking in terms of atomic transactions lowering the counterparty risk that blockchain today allows. One has to keep on thinking that we come from some crisis related to different reasons, among which the fact of having an infrastructure that was not, allowing the good management of the counterparty risk during the financial crisis of 2007-2008. Well, this was one of the problems. Today, we have that the type of infrastructure. If we keep somehow the eyes on the ball, right? If we keep the attention to the intrinsic value proposition of blockchain, we may end up with unleashing the possibilities of this infrastructure in the digital age.
And one last question. Are you seeing a polarization in the use of decentralized and centralized infrastructures?
I see a polarization in the rhetoric. I see a lot of need of existing in terms of opposition to the other camp, right? When it comes to the actual uses in the blockchain world, then there is a perfect understanding that not everything can be public all the time, and a set of walled gardens doesn't allow the potential of, I would say, finance in general to be unleashed. If you think about it, the logic of walled gardens has been what has created damage to, the European banking system compared to other banking systems. The walled garden logic has been what has created at a certain point the too big to fail type of situations in the US and possibly also in some Asian countries. So I think that having the ability to create a convergence between what is centralized and what is decentralized can be a very good way to move forward and solve some of the problems that have been blocking us in the past. I'm thinking, for instance, about the convergence that even the central banks are somehow accepting to do there. So now, more than 1 or 2 years ago, the concept that a centralized, even in the name, institution like a central bank, using a decentralized infrastructure like a distributed ledger technology, well, is no more anathema, is no more something that goes against, which at the end of the day, if you think about it, it's a convergence, a little bit like, the ability to enforce law and order through decentralized infrastructure like roads, motorways, and so on. So I think that there is the more and more in the real life, apart from the narrative,